Chico's Smoke Shop, where you'll save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands to choose from inside the store or through the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week, where you'll save up to 40% every day at Chico's Smoke Shop.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. I am Justin Spears, as always, here with the one and only Michael Lev, and we are T-minus days until the Arizona Wildcats football season, the first year under head coach Kevin Sumlin. Michael, you've been around first-year head coaches a lot longer than me. How does this one compare to others in the past? Because I know you were at USC, and you know, you've seen all the change that happened with that program. Do you see any differences, any similarities in how they approach the new season? You know better than me, so go ahead and break that down.
Hey, Justin.
How's it going?
Good. Kevin Sumlin's an interesting guy. He's very friendly when you talk to him. Like, you can totally tell how he's able to connect with people because he just has a way about him that I don't think is BS either. Like, I think that's just kind of how he is. So that's been really noticeable to me. I think I noted this to you the other night. He walked out of the building and was talking to like four players. Like, yeah, they were just all kind of walking out together. And, you know, I don't want to make this like the new guy's great and the old guy was terrible, but I don't think you would have seen that with the previous coach.
Yeah.
So just put it that way. As far as, you know, the way that he's run his training camp and those sorts of things, I mean, you heard in the summer about how rigorous the workouts were, right, under strength and conditioning coach Brian Johnson. Everyone's, you know, that's kind of standard fare whenever there's a new coach. But it seems like he's treated this training camp more like an NFL training camp. Like, there hasn't been like a crazy amount of hitting. He's kind of eased up a little bit after 2 weeks or so. He's given veterans time to recuperate from injuries. And I think that's smart. You know, I mean, let's face it. Arizona, I think while a lot of people have high hopes, you know, depth is still a concern at a handful of positions. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit here during the podcast. But there are certain guys that they just can't afford to lose. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to push them if they already kind of know what they're doing, if they've already proved themselves in spring. The one other thing I'll say about my own personal experiences with new head coaches is with Lane Kiffin, with Steve Sarkisian, some other, you know, kind of new coaches that I covered, they were from the same tree as the coaches who preceded them, Pete Carroll.
Mm.
So there were kind of a lot of, you know, similarities in terms of their philosophies or their programs or sort of the way that they would talk about how they wanted to get things done. The difference here is that this is a whole new thing. This is, as they have said many times, a new era. I mean, this is a totally new philosophy. Someone who's coming from a different conference, different part of the country. Almost all the coaches are new, so it's a big change.
Sure.
And we'll see how that, you know, manifests on the field.
One thing about Arizona heading into this season that I'm sure a lot of people are excited about, if you religiously follow the team, is not only Khalil Tate, because we all know he's a dynamite player. He's going to be one of the better quarterbacks, not only in the Pac-12, but in the country. But the defense side of the ball, I think that is actually my most exciting, or I'm actually most excited about the defense, because not only is Marcel Yates back, I mean, because, again, the defense doesn't really have to learn anything new. Everything about the defense is practically the same. And they have a lot of returners on that side of the ball. And you also sprinkle in new faces, guys like P.J. Johnson, who is a need for them. He's 6'4", 320 pounds. He's just a
335.
335?
Wow. Yeah, listed at 335.
It's okay. But he's a big boy.
Yeah,
and
but he's also athletic.
Yeah.
I mean, he posted that picture or that video of himself dunking, because I feel like people probably telling him you can't do that anymore or whatever. So
yeah,
he was maybe able to do in high school, and he did it, and it looked super
easy
for him. I agree with you. I think that the offense might have some struggles at times early in the season, especially because of the offensive line, which we can get to later.
Yeah.
But I think the defense is going to be way better than people think. I mean, look at who maybe like the three best players are, or the three, you know, the stars of that defense, right? Tony Fields, Colin Schuller, Kylan Wilborn. They were all true freshmen last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And were pretty good players as true freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
Usually what happens is you make the biggest jump of your entire career from your freshman year to your sophomore year. So let's say all those three guys improved by 20%, 30% from what they were last year.
That's great.
That's the makings of like a, those are really good playmakers. They've made the defensive line bigger, so there should be, you know, fewer blockers getting out to those guys on the second level. So
yeah.
I'm really encouraged about the defense as well.
And Noel Mazzoni, I gotta stop saying Noel. Is it Noel or Noel? It's Noel.
It's
Noel. Noel Mazzoni.
Noel, yeah.
Last week after practice, he came out and said, or you asked him, anybody on the defense that jumps out to you? And he said that god dang number 7. And he's referring to Colin Schuller,
yep,
saying how unblockable he is. And granted, it is during practice, so we can't really say that Colin Schuller is absolutely unblockable. But for him being a freshman All-American and going, you said, making that jump to your sophomore year, and he's already impressing guys like Mazzoni and Kevin Sumlin. I mean, he looks like he's going to be the leader of this defense. I thought at this point we would be talking about Demetrius Flanagan Fowles as a leader of the defense just because he's a senior, but Colin Schuller, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to have a Scooby Wright kind of year because that is really hard to do, but I could see him possibly being an all Pac-12 linebacker.
I agree, and I think it could happen as early as this year. You know, piggybacking on what you said about him being unblockable, Coach Sumlin said the other day that, you know, Colin's like calling out the plays.
Yeah.
You know? So part of that is they become so familiar with each other, as you know from being on a football team. Like, you go against the same offense over and over, eventually you kind of pick up on their tendencies.
Yeah.
But we also know that Colin is a really smart football player. He's very instinctive. He used to be a running back back in the day, which I think helps him a lot to kind of, he kind of knows where the running back's going to go. He's able to think,
yeah,
like put himself in the mind of the back. And that enables him to, you know, hit the hole like the running back would. My question is, and what I think can happen is, can he diagnose plays like that in real games?
Mm.
You know, is he going to be able, does he have enough time as a college athlete? And there's only a limited amount of time that you have because you got other things going on, but to put in the film study, all the work, you know, now that he's more comfortable with kind of everything else, where he's figuring out what the play is before it happens.
He's going to go full Tony Romo and predict every single play before it happens.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the gig when you're the middle linebacker, right? I mean, you and the quarterback are sort of, you're trying to figure each other out on any given play. You've heard it a million times, like, they mic up the quarterback in the game, and he's like, you know, 54 is the mic, 54
yeah.
is the mic. They're trying to identify where the middle linebacker is, what he's going to do, and that kind of affects everything else. Well, on the other side, the middle linebacker is trying to do that same thing, and I think Colin Schuller is, he's got enough savvy and acumen to be able to do that.
And plus that relationship with Tony Fields, it seems like those two do everything together. They walk out together at Lowell Stevens football facility.
Stepbrothers, right?
Yeah, Ebony and Ivory.
But
live
no,
together in harmony.
But no, that helps them on the field, right? Like, if you know, it's kind of like basketball.
Sure.
Like, when you play with someone a long time, you just kind of know what they're going to do. You don't have to really think about it or talk about it. It just becomes instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And you can work with somebody. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah.
You know, to have those, I mean, they're a 4-2-5 defense. You know, I don't know how you want to classify the the stud position, whether it's a linebacker, but it's basically like a stand-up defensive end.
Yes.
So those two linebackers have to work in concert. And I think that they did a good job of that last year, and I think they'll do a better job of it this year now that they've had a whole year together.
Mm-hmm. Another piece to the linebacker mix, if he is declared eligible for this year, it's Texas A&M transfer Santino Martial, and we all know about the situation that he's currently in, you know, accusing Texas A&M of paying him to host recruits and show them a good time around campus. That's,
among other things.
That is, yeah, that is still ongoing. But right now, he's mainly focused on getting that little waiver of eligibility so he can be a part of the Arizona Wildcats this year. And while linebacker isn't necessarily a need, he is a great player enough to where if somebody were to go down, as we all know, injuries do happen in football, it never hurts to have a little bit of depth. And I think he would be very beneficial for the Wildcats, not only as a guy that Marcel Yates can kind of keep in the back pocket just in case something happens with Tony Fields or Colin Schooler, but Jeremy Springer loves him on special teams, a part of the kickoff unit. But for Texas A&M transfers, we talked about is Santino isn't necessarily an absolute need. The one Texas A&M transfer that is of need is Robert Conjol, who is an offensive lineman. We've seen him get reps at center. He can even play guard a little bit. He's a utility kind of offensive lineman.
I think he would start at center if he were eligible. I really do. Let's just backtrack, though, real quick, okay? Just to make clear what this Markiel thing is all about, okay? He's trying to take advantage of an NCAA rule.
Yeah.
And that rule is that if there are some sort of extenuating circumstances that kind of forced you to leave your previous school, you can gain eligibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he hired the same lawyer that helped Shea Patterson get eligible this year at Michigan, right? They basically used Ole Miss's on probation. You know, this is a reason why my client had to transfer because of this stuff that went on at this other school. He should be allowed to play at Michigan, and they said yes. So, you know, I don't think that Santino really wanted to rat out his previous school. He just wants to play football.
Yeah.
Remember, he didn't play last year.
Redshirted.
He had a Lisfranc foot sprain, and he had to redshirt. So, you know, you're looking at taking away the first 2 years of this kid's career. I mean, as you know, I mean, it's a limited window for a football player.
Yeah.
This might be it for him. Mm-hmm. College might be like the end of his football career. I mean, hopefully he'll be able to go on and play in the pros. And even that only lasts so long. His dad actually played in the NFL 3 games in 1987 with the New Orleans Saints. That was it. That's it. That's the end of your NFL career right there. As far as the needs go, I mean, it's not an immediate need because you have Colin Schooler, but you're one Colin Schooler injury away from having what? I mean, Jacob Colacion, I mean, I don't know how much he's practiced this training camp, but I feel like we've seen him not practicing just as much as we've seen him practicing, or maybe we've seen him not practicing more than we've seen him practicing.
In the weight room.
So that's a concern, right?
Mm.
I mean, I sort of threw out the idea the other day of, you know, maybe Tony Fields moves over to play middle linebacker if something happened to Colin. That way, and you have Anthony Pandy at will, and they like him a lot. And I think he's going to be a player. They're going to figure out how to use him.
Yeah.
So it's not as immediate a need, but I think it is still a need, and it would be really helpful.
Would you say linebackers are probably – it is probably the deepest position for Arizona right now?
No. I'd say running back.
Running backs?
Yeah. I mean, Nathan Tilford can't even see the field right now.
And he's a monster.
He might be pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't really gotten into that much with the coaching staff, but what I sort of intuited from what they said was that it was not the running stuff, but the other stuff. Like picking up the offense, picking up blitzes, you know, like assignments. Like J.J. Taylor's really smart.
The little things.
Yeah, right. Which are important, though. I remember when we talked to Coach McKinney back in spring, and he like rattled off kind of a list of things that a running back had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like not just run the ball. It was also block. It was also catch. So they're looking for a well-rounded running back. That's why I think they've gone with J.J. Taylor Gary Brightwell, because they can do all of those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when we're talking about Robert Conjugal, and you know, and talking about depth, you know, one of the thinnest groups outside of cornerback is probably the offensive line, because we simply don't know what the mix is going to be. We kind of have an idea of what's going to happen, but at the same time, it's I feel like it's a crapshoot, and we're just going to have like it's going to be week 8, and we're going to have our 10th different offensive line combination during the season.
Well, but I know for a fact there's going to be a new combination starting in week 3, because that's when Leif Freck comes back.
Yeah,
and you know, I was talking to somebody the other day about this, like, how dumb does it look with this new redshirt rule that he has to sit out
two games
because he appeared in like one game as a freshman?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you kind of wonder if it would have been great if the NCAA like did something retroactively for some of these guys, but I guess it was probably just that would have created a huge logistical mess for them. And there would have been so many appeals and cases, so they kind of had to just like start it from this point forward. But I think they would like to have, you know, 15 scholarship offensive linemen, right? And I think they have 11 or 12. And two of those guys, Nathan Eldridge and Alex Kaczynski, are banged up, we think, but don't seem to be in the rotation at this point. And so, you know, they have two full-time returning starters, right? Leif Freck, Nathan Eldridge. Neither one of them is going to be available for week 1. We know Freck won't be for week 2. We don't exactly know what Eldridge's status is. Kaczynski is a guy who has played in games before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's some experience there. Cody Creason has started. That's the only one who has started a game for Arizona who's going to be in the starting lineup for this first game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of it is we don't know these guys. We haven't seen them play in games, and that's kind of a common thing in college, right? Like, if you like, you see the returning starters, and it gives you kind of a sense of comfort, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this guy's been in; these guys have been in games. You know what they can do. The offensive line's just—it's kind of a big unknown.
Yeah, and you know, we have Michigan State transfer Theo Lacusa.
Yeah.
He's a big body.
Yeah.
Joe Gilbert likes to put him at guard. So he's looking like he's going to be right there at that guard spot.
Which I think surprises a lot of people because
I thought he was going to be a tackle.
But I think that's for the purpose of having less disruption when Leif Freck
comes back.
Right?
Sure.
Like, if you had him at left tackle and then you bring Leif back, then you have to move Lacusa to a new position. Right? This way, you're like, okay, your job is to be the best left guard you can be. So you're going to play left guard. We'll figure out left tackle.
Mm-hmm.
And when Leif comes back, he's going to be our left tackle.
So Leif Freck. Okay, so let's fast forward to Southern Utah week.
Yeah.
Your starting offensive lineman is probably going to be left tackle Leif Freck, left guard Theo Lacusa.
Yeah.
Center.
Josh McCauley?
Big old question mark. Maybe? Robert Conjugal, Josh McCauley.
Stephen Bailey,
who's a JUCO transfer.
I don't know. I think those are maybe the three possibilities.
That's the big question mark.
Yeah.
So we'll just put question mark for center.
And we didn't mention Nathan Eldridge.
Because he hasn't even seen the field yet.
He's practiced some, but what's going, you know, like he barely practiced in spring. You know, like what's going on with his knees?
Yeah.
You know, is he well enough to play? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak like I know what's going on, because I've looked into it. I haven't gotten a concrete answer yet, but it just seems like he's not healthy.
Sure.
So that's a problem.
Michael Elatis, where does he fall on the mix? Because it seems like now we're going into his third year being a part of the program, and he was a player that I thought could step in and play immediately as a freshman. Last year, he got some time,
not much,
during games, but not much. I mean, the sample size last year was very small. I think the most snaps he played last year was against UTEP.
Yeah.
But we all know that was a thumping So that's when all your reserve players didn't get majority of the snaps. I mean, he's a big body. He's strong. Something that you would want on your offensive line. But we haven't really seen him make that jump to get some reps with the ones.
Yeah, I don't understand why he doesn't. What's not clicking there?
Yeah.
You know, he has all the tools you could possibly want. We've heard from day one about his exploits in the weight room, right? He seems to be a hard worker. Something is just not clicking.
Yeah.
All that being said, he might be the starting left tackle in the first game.
Yeah.
Because I've seen them, you know, throw him out there. And he played tackle in high school, as most of usually the best offensive lineman on the team does, right? So I don't know, maybe he's just more comfortable at tackle than guard. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe he's in that mix at right guard at some point if they decide Lacusa is the one at left guard. I don't know. I mean, I think he's in the top 7 or 8.
Sure.
Sure. I remember Rich Rodriguez would always talk about that, having that top 8. Right, and Sumlin alluded the other day to it's not necessarily just 5. It's like having a rotation, having a what if plan. I think they don't know for sure what the best 5 is right now,
yeah.
And that's why they're going to try different combinations. They're going to try different guys. Hopefully, the BYU game, you know, will be such that they can get away with that. Right. Hopefully, that's not a really tight game where they're scrambling to win it, and they can maybe experiment a little bit in the second half and try some different things. As you know, as a former offensive lineman, sometimes it's like, it's not just like who the best 5 individuals are, but who works together the best,
yes.
Right? Like,
yes.
Your center has to work with your guards, and your guards have to work with the tackles, right? So that might be part of it too.
Absolutely. And like you said, it's the best 5 that works together.
Right.
And although, you know, when I was playing center, although we had big guards, most of our best plays were when we took out our big guards and put in 2 smaller guards so they were able to pull and get to the next level and make plays. So, yeah, I totally agree with you right there. But Arizona last year, they were number 12 in the entire country in rushing offense.
No, he was higher than that.
No, it was actually number 6.
Six.
It was number 6, and they had a pretty solid offensive line because they had Jacob Alsadek, Gerhard DeBeer, Laith Frick,
healthy,
Nathan Eldridge.
Healthy Eldridge, yep.
Those were some guys right there. And I just have a feeling that this could actually be kind of the crutch for Arizona because while we sit here and talk about the cornerback depth, that could also be another crutch for Arizona. But you can't have a top rushing offense if your offensive lineman isn't up to par. And Khalil Tate, we all know as much as we want to see him do work with his arm, he does pretty good damage with his legs. It's just when I see all these predictions like SI picking Arizona to go 9-3, 10-2, going to the Rose Bowl. I just kind of was like okay, let's pump the brakes a little bit because week one, don't count out BYU. They always have a good front 7. They're always a little bit older. Got some veteran guys on that team. And then Ed Oliver the following week at Houston. So this offensive line is going to get baptized by fire.
They sure are. Sure. And so I wonder if there are some ways that they can compensate for that, right? I think the read option, which they've kind of downplayed, saying there's going to be fewer of those, I wonder if there might be maybe more of those than we thought as a way to force the, you know, as a defensive end, you got to hesitate, right? When you see that, when they're running those zone replays, what is Khalil Tate going to do? Is he going to hand off? That's a way to aid your offensive line. I think we're going to see a lot more quick passes.
Sure.
There's going to be a lot more quick screens.
Sean Brown.
There's going to be like just flare passes to the running backs. You know, just try to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands, get it into space. I think those are a couple ways that they might, you know, try to help the offensive line so they can figure out who their best guys are and also give them a little bit more time to get comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, dating back to his high school days, Khalil Tate is capable of improvising and scrambling and getting away. I mean, they actually, in the video that the U of A posted from their scrimmage couple Saturdays ago, there was a play where Kylan Wilborn came in clean, right? Totally clean. And Khalil did a little pivot, you know, spun away from him, reset his feet, chucked the ball like 40 yards downfield to Brian Castile for a touchdown. I heard all sorts of exploits from guys who covered him in high school, that he was just like a wizard, you know, as far as just getting, you know, running around, kind of like Fran Tarkenton type stuff. We might, unfortunately, have to see some of that, especially in that Houston game, if they're getting through the line. Khalil might have to use his legs to, you know, not just run downfield, but just get away from guys, just kind of improvise and make things happen.
I think Michael Lev just came up with a nickname for Khalil Tate. We spent all last season trying to come up with a nickname, and I think it was it K-Train and Special K was a couple that were thrown out. UVA settled with Big Cat.
I'm not a huge fan of Big Cat.
I like the Wizard.
The Wizard. Man, we should get into this. We should do a whole podcast on this at some point. But I was reading up on some stuff about Khalil and that SI story. They said he was called the Sheriff in high school. But isn't Peyton Manning? Peyton Manning's the Sheriff.
Yeah.
Right? So you can't really like take a nickname that another...
the deputy.
Another quarterback has the deputy. I mean, I liked Kal-El, but it's because of the Superman reference.
Yeah.
It was very similar to his actual name of Khalil.
Yeah.
But it's just not catchy.
Yeah.
You know, like, it would be cool, like, it would be a cool, like, illustration, maybe, to do a Kal-El kind of Superman...
I like that.
...tape thing, but it's not, like, it just doesn't roll off the tongue, so... Consider the Wizard. We'll see.
We'll go with the Wizard. We'll see how he likes
for
it.
Now. Yeah.
All right. Well, that would do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Hope everyone enjoys their weekend. Don't forget to download the free Wildcaster app, subscribe to this podcast and Apple Podcasts, and don't forget to follow us on all of our social media platforms. Thanks for listening.
Chico's Smoke Shop, where you'll save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands to choose from inside the store or through the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week, where you'll save up to 40% every day at Chico's Smoke Shop.